B-Pod Studios.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
And the pitch swung on. There goes the left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. This is Glaber Day. He rockets one into the left field seats deep. And the Yankees on the grand slam take a 4-2 lead. Oh, like a good Glaber. Torres is there.
He's such an ass. And I know he's not for everyone, but I love him. He's so corny that I actually love him. It's John Sterling with the Yankee call. The Yankee 4-2 win of the Red Sox, who've now lost five straight. An ugly week for them. But John Sterling, I can't get enough of him. I made it my point to, like, I'm like, because the Glaber one, it's Glaber Day. I hadn't heard the like a good neighbor, like a good Glaber. Torres is there. Like, what? he's just, on the one end, the worst. I just love it. It's so corny. It's so bad that I just find something enjoyable.
See, I'm stunned by that, Jim, because you are a very discerning person, and there's a lot of stuff that you don't like. I almost swore. There's a lot of stuff that you do not like, and I would not think that someone of your taste would tolerate John Sterling's hokey calls.
Oh, like a good Glaber. Torres is there.
Like, you know, he worked very hard on that. Not to Glaber the point, Susan, but what a, oh boy, Glaber swings the bat like a saber. Oh, like, he's just, you know, that he looks up rhymes. He's trying to figure out new little, you know, permutations of how he can use those words. And you know what? I think my enjoyment comes from the fact that he really pisses people off. Like, they find it so detestable and corny that they hate him. And I think because of that, that's why I like him. He's been around forever. The guy's done, you know, he's been.
No, he used to do Hawks basketball back in the day. He's had some health problems. We obviously wish him well. But what are you saying? I thought he was freestyling all this stuff up the top of his dome. Are you saying, like, you know, he's sitting
there? He absolutely takes notes and tries to find, you know, tries to find words to rhyme with, or, you know, to really alter those words. Like a good Glaber State Farm. Oh, no, like a good Glaber. Torres is there. Come on. You don't just come up with that with the top of your head.
I'm trying to think of some of my favorite ones that he's I will say, you know, it's an A-bomb from A-Rod.
Yeah, like, that one's
decent. And what was the one for Nick Swisher? He's like,
Swishalicious.
Swishalicious.
Which I don't even really get.
I don't get that one either.
Yeah. No, he's always trying to take, you know, like, that's a commercial. The State Farm commercial. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Yeah.
Like a good Glaber.
Oh, like a good Glaber. Torres is there.
Oh, God.
They're having problems in the Glaber Union, Susan.
They're
going to end up having to kill Hoffa and bury him underneath Yankee Stadium.
I like that. What was the one you said? Oh, don't Glaber
the
point.
Yeah, don't Glaber the point, Susan. Glaber swings the bat like a saber. Oh, you size queen. Oh, it's 4-2 Yankees. Ralph and Cranston on the Red Sox. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the time. Listen, you know, I loved what the Red Sox did because I don't want to see them be biased. In all honesty, I do not think that this team has the ability to win it again this year. So now that you did it, and I liked, I know Gasper said he liked, you know, what Dombrowski might have done last year. Yeah, that was nice. It won him a championship. But everywhere Dombrowski's done, Ben, he did that. And then the team sucks like Detroit for the next few years. I wanted him to get, maybe look, see if somebody will take Porcello. If somebody would take Price, I would have paid for some of the salary. JD, I might have really seriously thought before he does not opt. See, this team now has to get rid of some of this salary. They really do. And you've got enough good young players here. I mean, you know, you got Devers, you got Betts, who I really want to re-sign. You got Bogaerts, you got Basket. You got enough younger guys here that you can still go on, rather than chase this championship. And I really don't think they have the ability to do it. I think Houston and a couple of other clubs are better. But staying pat, you know, and him saying, oh, now we got to get better, that's it. If it doesn't work, I want to retool, not tear it apart, not trade any more prospects chasing it. So I'm all for letting it go the way it was, not trading Chavis for a reliever, not doing anything dumb. Leave it like it is. I was all for it. Hey, but if they make the playoffs, that's fine. This team is not going to – they don't have the ability to win the World Series, so I'm glad they didn't chase it.
So, Ralph, just quickly, it sounds to me like you're more apathetic on this year's team and just looking towards the future, and it's not – you're not coming from a place of anger looking at this year's team.
No, because we're spoiled. You know, you look at what we did. I mean, the Patriots win, the Red Sox win, and people, they get too spoiled in this. Look, we won – the Red Red Sox won the World Series last year. No one's repeated since, what, 99? It doesn't happen every year. And Dombrowski did what he had to do. No, I'm not upset. I did not think that Price, I'd love to ask you guys one question.
Sure.
About Price if I could. You know, I never thought Price or Kyrie Irving are bad people. I thought Tyreek Hill is a bad person. But the Red Sox do something that I shake my head. They constantly bring players here that don't belong here, whether it's Renteria, whether it's Price.
Sandoval, Julio Lugo.
Sandoval, why do they keep bringing guys that don't belong in this market? Just like Kyrie. Kyrie isn't a bad person. They made him, but they fight the media. They come here. The Red Sox should start saying, you know what? Anybody we do acquire, he's got to have the stones and everything else to take this media and go. See, that's why I want to re-sign Betts. Betts is great in this market. Nothing bothers him. He rolls with the that's what I
point.
Yeah. Don't think so. Well, you guys know better than me.
I don't know about
Ralph,
that.
Ralph, thanks for the call. Yeah, I just think he's strongly influenced by one of the guys you mentioned, and that's David Price. And I think that's part of the problem.
I think Mookie is very good to deal with. He's unfailingly polite, but I think he's very guarded in this market. I think he's very calculated, very guarded, tries to avoid controversy at all turns, and I think he just sort of has a little bit. I think his guard's up, and there's a little anxiety there about saying or doing the wrong thing. So it's just sort of very straightforward.
I asked this. I had to fill in on the baseball reporters from Mets last night. I asked it to Matt McCarthy. Say they miss the playoffs, and they kind of strip some of these parts. Maybe JD Martinez opts out. They trade Mookie Betts, and it's a completely different looking team in 2020. Yeah. Does that tarnish last year's title a little bit?
No. I looked at and I said, look, there's a 3-year window here. And I based that on when they acquired Sale and sort of when some of these contracts. I'll be honest, I didn't think they'd be able to re-sign some of the guys they have. I didn't think they'd be able to re-sign Bogarts. And so, they had a 3-year window. You win one championship. That's pretty good. All things considered, if you can sort of step back, it doesn't tarnish it. The one thing I want to say quickly, just jumping off of what Ralph said, though, I think Ralph was onto something. Like, I would have been okay with them being sellers. I would have been happier with them selling than I am with them sort of standing pat and doing nothing and leaving it in neutral. Because at least then there's a plan and you're making a move. If they sold off Porcello and JD Martinez and said, look, we don't think we're good enough. We're not going to make it. Let's see what we can get back to boost this farm system. I would have been okay with that. I would have endorsed that. That would have been fine for me. But I think just doing nothing is the easy, lazy way out.
Michael in Brookline on Dave Dombrowski and him taking the easy way out at the trade deadline this week. Hey, Michael.
Yeah, I'm critical of Dombrowski for the press conference that he held, but not for what he did. This team sucks, okay? And you need to realize that. So buying was an absolutely ridiculous situation, especially when you look at the player, for instance, that the Tigers got for Shane Green. The kid's in AAA, he's blocked, and he is almost a guaranteed Major League ball player. He's already up through AAA. He is a talent. Okay.
Which one is this? Which player are we talking about?
Oh, I can't think of his name right now. I mean, look at the trade.
Is it the outfielder or the pitcher that you're talking
about? The outfield.
Okay, because people are projecting him as like a fourth outfielder.
Well, but he's a major league ball player. Okay.
He's a 24-year-old fourth outfielder though.
But he's blocked where he is, so they gave up nothing for Shane Green.
But Bobby Dalbec is blocked where he is at 24 years old at third base in Portland.
At third base he's blocked, but he might be able to move to first.
Wouldn't he be blocked
and then
by Chavis?
Then you move Chavis back to second, which is where he was playing to start with. Was he not playing second base?
No, he was, but I mean, long term, is that where he is going to play in the majors at second base?
But he can. I mean, you have to be flexible. And how far away is Dalbec?
I don't know. Overall, Michael, it just sounds like you've given up on this team, and I feel like a lot of people have. Or you're waiting until what happens over the next 3 games in New York before you wave the white flag.
I would have given up Bobby Dalbec for Shane Green.
Yeah.
I would have had no problem with that.
Well, it's such an unknown with a lot of these prospects anyway. I mean, you want to have something so you have pieces to move come the trade deadline, but I don't know. I also don't want it to be a barren wasteland, and that has kind of been Dave Dombrowski's unfortunate calling card in other places he's been, in Miami and in Detroit.
But having a farm system, Jim, it's not just about not trading. You actually have to replenish it.
Yeah.
And they're trying. It's just they're in the beginning of it, so a lot of their guys are in the lower levels. And I'd say this on Shane Green. He's not a rental. He's under team control for 2020. So then you would have potentially solved the issue for next year's team, too. For Bobby Dalbec, 24-year-old third baseman who's blocked. Now, could he play first base? Sure. But you also have Tristan Cassius, who's down, you know, supposed to be your best prospect, who could do it. And I think ultimately they're going to have to find another second. I don't think Michael Chavis is a long-term second baseman, based on what I've seen defensively.
Yeah, and it also feels like he could be getting popped for PEDs at any moment again. Like, who knows? You know, but it didn't happen before, so who knows? I don't know. He did kind of... Imagine what this team would be without him, if they never brought him up at what felt like a desperate move at the time.
Yeah.
Mr. Pump and Dump over there, we haven't gauged your... feelings about the Red Sox after this ugly week and that loss last night. Have you just given up? Yeah, apathetic?
Yeah, it's over. Yeah. It's over. That trade deadline was demoralizing. The way they're playing right now is demoralizing. So, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I am, too. Like, this will be a tough couple of months to get through. But maybe, you know, my hope is if it does get ugly, is it does feel like it's really going that other way. You know, it won't be as bad as, like, chicken and beer, but we'll get stories. You'll hear some stuff from behind the scenes. I feel like that's coming. Maz definitely feels that way. He's like, oh, if it starts to slide, there's seven games out of that second wild card. Oh, the dirt's going to start flying.
You need a Mike Lansing guy in there who's just miserable to just, like, go off and just, you know, just make it miserable for everybody.
Well, I think they have that in David Price, so I think you can count on another blow up with him and Eck or something. It feels like something will come, but
see, one of these days, Jim, they need to send you down there with the microphone like you used to do back in the days, you know, to gather sound, and you need to ask David Price questions with the David Price voice. That would be great.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah, I'd get five right across the eyes, and rightfully so for mocking him with that bad impersonation. Hey, David.
Yes. Oh, you're the guy. Yeah, I'm the guy.
Sorry
to hear about your dog, Astro. You son of a bitch.
I am. And I get thrown out, and that's it. No, I'm not going to be going down there. Those days are long gone. He won't see me in any locker rooms. No, I'll stay here, hiding behind the microphone, being a complete a-hole. That's one of the great things about working in sports talk radio. We'll get back to the Patriots. It's been a bad week for the offense at camp. They've now practiced, what, eight times? Eight times since training camp has begun. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, said how bad it was saying earlier this week on Felgrim-S, it's gotten so bad that Brady got benched. Happy birthday boy. Tom Brady, 42 today, getting benched by Bill Belichick at camp. What? We'll play that sound. We'll touch on the woes of the Patriots offense so far at training camp. Coming up next year, Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Basically, the last 2 days, it's been a crap fest down there. It's been really bad to the point where today, you know, it sure looked like to me, Brady got benched. He got benched for three plays today down at practice. Belichick threw Jarrett Stidham out there for the next three plays, and then Brady resumed his reps. But to me, Brady got benched today for three plays, and I think that was a direct message to the offense that enough of this crap.
Whoa. How about that for the birthday boy? Tom Brady, 42 today. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. That's Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal, who joined Felger and Maz. It's actually Maz and myself earlier this week talking about the woes of the Patriots offense at training camp so far. There's now eight practices in, but that particular day, I think it was around Wednesday, might have been, yeah, after Wednesday's practice, Brady benched, at least that's what it looked like to him, for just the ineptitude. There was a bad handoff to Sony Michel. They run a lap, they come back. There was a procedural penalty. They run a lap, they come back, and it's just immediate bad handoff to Sony Michel. And that's where Belichick lost it, puts in Jarrett Stidham for three plays. It's been a mess from everything that I've heard and read, and a lot of inconsistencies. Their number one draft pick and N'Keal Harry, Chris, lining up incorrectly, having a lot of drops. They're not really even putting him in other positions, like in the slot, or having him do too much. It's just like, hey, can you run a straight line and please try to catch the ball? Do you have any concerns here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you expect the offense, given what they have at receiver, to be a little bit behind a very good defense. And so... am I concerned? Yeah, I am concerned for the first four games of the year. But, I mean, I think at the end of the day, they'll figure it out. You see they're going to throw it to the running backs a little bit more. Now, you know how I feel about that. I think you can use that in some regard to help you. It's a supplement, but it can never be a replacement for wide receivers. And I think we saw that even a little bit last year. It's asking a lot for a running back to do that for an entire season, especially a guy like James White, who's so valuable to them, they have to keep him on a pitch count. But when you look at it, you know, here's the thing. If the Patriots are trying to convince Tom Brady, or if Tom Brady needs any convincing, I should say, to continue to play beyond this season, just hypothetically, let's say he does. You know, he's year to year, as Rodney Harrison said. Let's say that's right. He's year to year. They're not doing a great job of convincing. I mean, between last year and this year, it's not like they really give him a ton of help. It seems like the older he gets, instead of making his job easier, a la John Elway, they're making it harder.
No, it feels that way. I mean, it's wide receiver and then left tackle. We'll get to that coming up. Like, it just feels like, yeah, this might be difficult sledding for Brady this year. There is nothing on the contract. Hadn't felt, he's gone this deep since 2010. What do you think is going on there?
I don't know. I think it's a difficult one to read. You know, if I had to guess, what I would say is that the Crafts are sort of trying to thread the needle a little bit here. Again, Tom's deal normally gets done between Tom and Robert Kraft, and then it's up to Don Yee, Tom Brady's agent, and Bill Belichick to sort of work out the particulars, you know, however it fits into the salary cap, all that other stuff. So I wonder if, based on everything that's happened over the last couple of years, you know, the Cold War and all that stuff and what happened with Guerrero, I wonder if it's a situation where the Crafts don't want to do anything that looks like they're sort of undermining Bill and Bill's decision-making here. And Bill might be looking at it and saying, this is a 42-year-old quarterback. Let's see how he plays this year, and we'll go from there.
Would you play in the preseason or at least
no.
the first game coming up Thursday?
No. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think 90% of the league wouldn't play, but that's not the way Tom's built. He's never done anything like that. I just don't think he's wired that way. I think the Patriots know it. So he'll be out there. I mean, if he really wanted to press the point, then yeah, you say like, hey, I'll practice. I'll do these joint practices. Those are really good. I think they're helpful. But no, I'm not playing in a preseason game until my contract gets done, until I have a contract beyond this year. I mean, that's 100% what I would say. I think most established superstar quarterbacks would do something like that. But Tom's never done that. I don't think he's going to do it now.
I don't know why any superstar would play in any of these preseason games. And I guess, you know, every once in a while, maybe you feel a little bit of guilt and you want to get out there in front of the home fans. You play a couple of series, fine. But do you really need it? Like, Julio Jones has taken the stance of, I'm not playing in any of these. He's got a little bit of a contract squabble going on with the Atlanta Falcons. Like, collectively, any of the superstars? And I can understand, look, if you're the 52nd, 53rd guy on the roster, maybe there's going to be some resentment there towards some of these superstars. But, I don't know, there's a hierarchy. There is in life. Know your role. I think collectively, none of them should play in these useless exhibitions.
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the, if you're an NFL player, some of the only leverage you have at any point is withholding your services, whether it's holding out from training camp or withholding your services from a game or whatever. And that's what you're seeing around the league with, you know, Michael Thomas got his deal from the Saints, Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon holding out, what you said about Julio Jones. And I think for this Patriots team, if Tom Brady were to say, I'm not playing in these preseason games, maybe not so much the first one against Detroit, but if he's not playing in, say, the second one or the third one, you know, I think that does send a message in terms of what they're trying to do and what they're trying to ultimately accomplish, and it would sort of set the team back. But I just don't think Tom's ever going to do that. He's never going to put himself ahead of the team like that.
Something else Patriots-related was talked about a lot earlier in the week, and that is Bill Parcells not being in the Patriots Hall of Fame, as Rodney Harrison went in. It was on Sunday that they had the enshrinement ceremony.
It was Monday.
And then Dan Shaughnessy, the Boston Globe, tweeted, well, it's tough to take the Patriots Hall of Fame seriously without Bill Parcells. I agreed. I felt most rational Patriots fans would agree, but whew, boy, was I wrong. Cam and Taunton on this very thing. Go ahead, Cam.
You know, Leighton Felder Majesty, Matt McCarthy, said something that I had been saying a week is, he's one of the biggest figures in team history. Just answer me this question. Kraft, Belichick, Brady, Gronkowski, Hanna. After those five, who is a more important name in team history than Bill Parcells? There isn't one, because he gave you credibility, and he gave you the launching pad of Dynasty 1.0. He should absolutely be in the Team Hall of Fame, 100%.
I could not agree more, and I was shocked to see, you know, our good friend Mike from Woburn and all these other people just bashing Parcells and his credentials. Like, I can see bashing Parcells because people hate the way he left here and what happened and not taking the plane back from the Super Bowl with
the team.
It was
inexcusable. It was awful, and the Crafts have the right, and they should be angry about
that. Yes, totally.
But fans, you know what? Like 30 years later, you're still mad about this? Like, that sucked, and it was gross the way that he left after that Super Bowl. But come on.
Your franchise was a joke before that guy showed up. He built the foundation on which this dynasty has been built. You know, he poured that foundation, and he legitimized a laughingstock joke of a franchise. There's no question about it. And then you go back and look at, too, some of the players he brought in. And look, we can debate because I've seen it on you know, Twitter. Okay, he didn't want Terry Glenn, so, like, you know, he walked out of the draft room, so don't give him credit for Lauren Malloy or this guy or that guy. But he didn't have anything to do with the pre-draft prep.
Right. No, I mean, it's disingenuous. And I think it stems from a couple of things. It's that people are still
You know, they're like old scorned women when it comes to how, you know, that week was handled after the Super Bowl or leading into the Super Bowl, where he's on the phone trying to take the job with the Jets. Like, I get it. It's awful. They handled that terribly. But to still be mad over that, okay, 30 years later, like, get over it. And then the other thing, I think that there's a sensitivity for a lot of Patriots fans, and I think it's people that are younger than us, Chris, that, well, they're really only over the last 30 years, the only real true competition in the grand scheme of things for Bill Belichick when it comes to coaching, when you're talking about him and what his legacy is, it's Bill Parcells. And I don't think people like to have the two compared.
Yeah.
There's a sensitivity there, and they're just like bootlickers for everything Robert Kraft and Belichick and Brady in this era, and they just don't even want to acknowledge what that was with Bill Parcells, and he's a turncoat, and F him. Like, it's,
yeah.
I think people really lost their minds after the Deflategate thing, and it's like, it's the you're either with us or against us type of thing.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it's those people that get so sensitive about it that look at Parcells as just like, you know, one of the true enemies in Boston sports history. And I just think it's revisionist history is what it is.
You are so right, Jim. And I'll just say this, you know, whatever you think of Parcells, that's fine. But Ty Law going into the Hall of Fame today, 1995 draft for Bill Parcells. Here are the first three players he took. Ty Law, our good friend Ted Johnson, and Curtis Martin. Two of those guys are in the Hall of Fame. The other guy has three Super Bowl rings and was an excellent player. So say what you will. I mean, Parcells significantly upgraded the talent on this team. And a lot of the guys that Belichick inherited, and look, he drafted Seymour, and he went out and got Mike Vrabel, and they don't win without those guys. But a lot of the guys in the beginning, and guys that ended up sort of being core guys and establishing the Patriot way, Willie McGinnis, another one, those guys were Parcells guys, and they would not have taken the type of coaching that they got from Belichick initially if they hadn't had the experience of being with Parcells.
John in Rhode Island on Parcells and the Patriots Hall of Fame. Hello, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think something that a lot of people don't really talk about too is that, yeah, it's awful that how Parcells left, but I think Kraft, he could have handled things a lot better back then when Parcells was coach of the team, and I think he had a lot to do with, you know, obviously had a lot to do with why Parcells wanted to get out of here. Not excusing the way he did leave, but Kraft was a huge part of that too. So, I mean, you got to take that into account, and he absolutely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for turning this organization around. Thanks.
Yeah, it's just the thing kind of just feels petty at this point. And Dallas has done the same thing with Jimmy Johnson. I didn't even know this until we were talking about it on Felger and Maz earlier in the week. Jimmy Johnson's not in the Cowboys ring of
fame.
Are
you serious? Yeah. Oh, that is a travesty.
Right? Like, come on.
That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, the Cowboys, for what they were in the 90s, that really was mostly because of Jimmy Johnson and his drafting. And that's just, I mean, we know like that ended ugly between him
and Jerry Jones.
And you end up with Barry Switzer.
Is Switzer in it?
No, he isn't.
Okay.
So that would truly be embarrassing. Like, if Barry Switzer was in there and he got that one title by default. Like, you could have put a statue there that year when they won that in 95. Please. So it's just, I get it. It's their team. It's their right. But for fans, like some of the stuff that I saw online, especially for Mike Rubin, who I consider a friend too, I was like, Mike, really? Like, that? Come on. Like, you really feel this way? It's crazy. 617-779-0985. You want to continue to weigh in on that, because that seemed to get people hot this week on either side on the Bill Parcells debate. Have at it. Again, 617-779-0985. Do want to touch on the Isaiah Wynn situation and left tackle for the Patriots at training camp. Maybe that's contributing to why the offense has had its struggles so far. We'll get to that coming up after the Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone on Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray. You will listen. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Feel good about that left tackle situation?
We have a lot of things that we need to work on in every area of the team, everything. So I don't think I feel good about anything right now. I don't feel necessarily bad about it. We'll see how it is. Start to find out when competitive situations in the next couple of weeks. Might not really know where we are on some things until the middle of the season. I don't know. We'll see.
Even if I'm not getting reps, I'm still mentally getting reps. Standing there with Coach Carr or some of the other players, you know, we're making calls out there.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick being asked about the left tackle situation, followed up by the guy they drafted to be their left tackle going forward after yesterday's practice. That would be Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia, who tore his Achilles last year and didn't play. Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. This has been my number one concern going into 2019. Will it probably trip them up? No, because they're the Patriots and they figure it out. Hell, they won a Super Bowl in a year like last year where I mostly thought that they sucked. But I am still concerned about this, and I will be until further notice. Isaiah Wynn is going to be their left tackle, they hope. But so far, camp, not really any real reps for him. Yesterday, a little bit more for him. He's been physically cleared to perform, so fine. But it's been journeyman Dan Skipper, who Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal was all hot for until he had a bad couple of practices this week, and, well, he regressed. The guy's been, you know, cut 10 times over the last few years. So, you know, what the hell do you really expect from a guy, even if he's 6'9 and built like the mountain? He, I guess from what I've read, he's over his pads and all this stuff. He's not the answer. So left tackle, a question mark. Do you trust it's going to be Isaiah Wynn? There's talk this week that maybe the Patriots are in on Trent Williams, the left tackle, seven-time Pro Bowler with the Washington Redskins. He's got some sort of dispute going on with the team. It has to do with the medical group there that he doesn't trust. He wants them all out. It also has to do with the contract. So that seems like a mess. But the Patriots could maybe be in on him in a trade. Your concern level at left tackle, and how do you think that they handle it? And should they be in on Williams?
Concern level, I'd say, at left tackle is pretty high. I would say, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 7.
Oh,
because
that's downright drastic for you.
Well,
Chris,
because I look at it, and I'm, you know, even if Wynn is healthy, Wynn was sort of a borderline left tackle in a lot of people's minds around the league to begin with.
Because of his size.
Yeah, because he's only 6'3", right? People think he can be a very good offensive lineman, but the question was, well, can he play left tackle? And people feel like he can play guard. They even feel like he could play right tackle. But, you know, left, can he play left tackle? And so, if he loses even 10% of what his agility was before the Achilles injury, can he still hold down that position? And then behind that, you don't really know. You know, Yodney Cajuste is a guy that, like, I'm high on from West Virginia, who's on NFI. But who knows when he'll be able to come off that. He had, I think it was a quad surgery before the draft even. So I don't know what that situation is. And then I guess you could move Tooney out there and they'll survive. I think Tooney could hold it down the way Logan Mankins did. But now are you, you know, Bill always says, you know, sometimes if you move a guy, it turns out you're just weakening two spots.
Right.
So is that what you're doing? So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns here for me at this left tackle position, and it's a really important position, obviously, in the NFL to begin with, but particularly when you have a 42-year-old quarterback who's not the most mobile in the world anymore.
Yeah, and I know. And so Ted Johnson was in on Felgard-Mazz yesterday, and Lord, look, he would know, but, you know, he said, don't worry about it that much because they'll move Tooney over. He had played tackle in college.
Correct.
NC State, right?
Yes, NC State.
And so they'll figure it out. They'll be fine. But I don't know. Like, I've always, from what I always understood, like, continuity is the most important thing when it comes to the offensive line. So why would you want to deplete yourself a little bit at guard where you are deep and then put Tooney to the left? Like, it's just, I hate when it starts getting all screwy like that.
I mean, Dante Scarnecchia will make it work. He's really good. The other thing is I would not put it as high as I put it if I had more confidence in the overall receiving core, or say Gronkowski was still here, because I've always felt, no disrespect to anybody playing that position, but Tom Brady's his own best pass protection. How quickly the ball comes out, you know, death by 1,000 paper cuts, that whole deal. But we saw a little bit last year when he's uncertain about wide receivers and where they're going to be, and he has to hold on to the ball a little longer. And as he gets older, you can get to him and you can shake him up a little bit. So now add in, not really sure about guys outside of Edelman in the receiving core, who he can throw it to. Not really sure what's going on at tight end, particularly for the first four games with no Benjamin Watson. And you have somebody at left tackle, whether it's Wynn or Tooney, who's not proven or established there. And you might have weakened another position so that it's easier to get the inside pass rush, which we all know will bother him, Super Bowl 42, because you had to move Tooney over. That's where my concern comes from.
So Trent Williams, again, there's been rumors that they're in on potentially, you know, making a trade for him. I would think they would, you know, they're not going to give like a first-round pick for him.
No,
again,
probably
he's been
like
around
since
2010.
At least a 2 and a 4, maybe.
So would you do it? Because it feels like, I mean, they brought in Donald Penn, who was last with the Raiders. It feels like that thing's not going to be fixed. And now there's I was reading just last night that Williams is saying he'll just sit out 2019 as a whole. They ignored his trade request back in June to the Redskins. So, I don't know, if they could make a deal for him, would you bring him in? Is he the answer?
I like him a lot as a player, but I did a little reading up on him. You know, one, the age is something that sort of I look at and say, I don't know. You have to give up the draft picks and, I assume, give him a big, fat new contract. Now, if he's willing to still play on the contract he has now and it's just trying to shoot his way out of D.C., then fine. But if you have to give him another fat new contract, I don't love that. And I don't think he's played all 16 games in a season since 2013. Oh, and also, by the way, he once violated the league's substance abuse policy and got a 4-game suspension. So if he does it again, he's in trouble.
Yeah, still, though, I mean, seven straight Pro Bowls. I mean, the guy's, he's played hurt before. Like, I just think that's what you need. It all really comes back to what I wish that they did, you know, going into camp and after, in the offseason, is put the franchise tag on Trent Brown. $13 million, just short of $13 million. You put it on him, and you bring Isaiah Wynn along slowly as insurance, and that's it. And then after that, you say goodbye to Trent Brown for 2019. Hopefully, you win another Super Bowl, and Wynn is your left tackle going forward. It just felt like they didn't handle it correctly. Then again, I was upset that they didn't bring Nate Solder back, and he went to the Giants and immediately sucked. So what the hell do I know? And I'm sure I'll end up getting this wrong, like everything else when it comes to this team. The other thing, and Greg Bedard wrote about this, the Williams situation on Boston Sports Journal earlier this week. If you do want Williams, it means, well, you would have to, you know, come to the realization you're not getting Rob Gronkowski back if he decides to unretire. He writes, bringing on Williams would likely end any chance of Rob Gronkowski, if the team had designs on that, rejoining the club or the team adding another sizable piece later on. They would be nearly out of meaningful contracts to tweak after the Brady deal, unless they wanted to extend another aging player in Devin McCourty. So to make this happen, if they were to trade for Williams, they would have to do the Brady deal to free up the money. It's around $10 million. But one-to-one, would you be willing to say goodbye to Rob Gronkowski if he decided to unretire to bring in Trent Williams?
No, I would not. I still hold out a little bit of hope for Rob, maybe riding to the rescue in the middle of the season. And I'm just, again, I mean, this is the easy way out here, but I just base it on Dante Scarnecchia and what he can do. And whether it's Wynn or it's Yoni Kajust or it's, you know, not Dan Skipper, obviously, but it's Tooney. Tooney body. Or Marcus Cannon,
yeah.
Whoever it ends up being, I think that it can be representative, that Scarnecchia can make it representative enough that if you got Gronkowski back, you'd be better off with representative left tackle and Gronkowski than Trent Williams and maybe a gaping hole at tight end.
Tim?
I'm with Gasper. I don't think you have enough offensive weapons right now for Brady himself, so if there's a possibility you can get an all-world tight end back in the fold, I do that because I have faith in Scarnecchia too. I think eventually they're going to figure out the offensive line. I think Brady, like Gasper said, is a big reason why they're usually successful. So I hold out hope that Gronk's going to come back at some point during this season. So I absolutely, I don't make that move.
You guys are right, and I'm sure I'm wrong, but I say Williams over Gronk, and it's coming from a place of spite too. Have you read or seen any of the clips of the camp that Jared Cook is having with the New Orleans Saints?
No.
He's apparently been phenomenal, like unbelievable in that camp so far. And Jared Cook, tight end, who the Patriots missed out on because Cook didn't want to come here, not knowing what the situation was and if he was going to be playing behind Rob Gronkowski. Because at the time...
Oh, really?
Yeah. At the time, it was reported because Gronk was waffling. Is he going to retire or not retire? Jared Cook was like, well, I don't know what's going to be, so I'm gonna go somewhere else. And he did. He went to the Saints, and he's apparently, you know, looked ridiculous, and he was good last year with the Raiders. They missed out on Cook because of Gronk's waffling. So... You're gone. You've retired. Bye. They need help at left tackle. You make that deal. That's it. You can't unretire. That's it. You've decided to retire. You're gone now. Zach and Bridgewater on this situation with Williams.
Yeah, I was just gonna say like something similar. Like we can't be holding out hope that Rob Gronkowski might magically come out of retirement and just leave all this cap space like available because he might do that. Like that's a pipe dream at best. We need to focus on the needs of this team going forward. And if Rob really wants to come out of retirement, then maybe they can work out some new deal with him where he takes less money because he took so long to make up his damn mind. There's no reason we wait for Rob Gronkowski. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Zach. Yeah. No, it's like that whole Belichick thing. Like, you're hurt, you're injured. No, life is for the living. You've decided to retire. You kind of, you hamstrung us enough in the offseason. Like, you've retired now. That's it. Goodbye. Greatest tight end of all time. But bye. You've retired now. Bye. Bye.
But do you win the Super Bowl last year without him?
No. James in East Boston, hello.
Hey, how are you? I mean, I'm kind of with that last caller, guys. I think that Rob Gronkowski is the Chara of the Patriots. Chara should have been traded years ago. Rob Gronkowski should have been traded years ago. He's injury prone. I am so sick of it. I don't know the fascination with these Patriots fans. And last question, this is a yes or no question. If Baker Mayfield has 2 great years in the NFL, will he be the next Patriots quarterback? Thank you.
No. Like, if he's great, why, Cleveland will never let him go.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all.
I'm a little confused on that.
And they shouldn't have traded him. Like, no, they don't win the Super Bowl without him last year. While I'm mad
And by the way, when I say that real quick, Jim, when I say they don't win the Super Bowl, like, people probably think I'm just talking about that game. No, I'm talking about the whole playoff.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't know.
Like, if he's not there blocking the way he blocked against the Chargers or playing the way he played, both blocking and catching against the Chiefs, and then doing what he did in against the Rams, like, I'm not just talking about one game. I mean the whole thing. If he's not there, you're not winning.
No, you got real Gronk in the postseason. Otherwise, in the regular season, it was Robert James Gronkowski, just another tight end. No, that you got the best of Gronk when you needed him the most. But now it's over. He's retired. Bye. I'd take Trent Williams. Thank you very much. A question for you, the Boston sports fan. Are you out on the gutless Red Sox? I wouldn't blame you. Are you lusting for a winner during these dog days of summer? If so, we have the cure for your say it right, Jim. The cure for you is the New England Revolution, who are in action tonight at Gillette Stadium. I kid you not. No, they are red hot, and they got a big match tonight against LAFC. We're going to get a preview of tonight's match with Charlie Davies, who's going to join us next here on Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Bruce Arena and company extend their unbeaten run to tie the club record at 11 games. Best run of success for the Revs since 05.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. So it's an 11-game unbeaten streak for the New England Revolution. They take that into tonight's match with LAFC at Gillette Stadium. LAFC, by the way, best record in the MLS. So it's a real test for this club, Bruce Arena, since he's taken over. It's been a completely different look for the New England Revolution. And joining us here in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline to preview tonight's match and talk a little bit about this, it's Charlie Davies, who was the soccer analyst and host on NBC Sports Boston, MLS Network, Sirius XM, now ESPN as well. You're going to be doing some ACC stuff. Charlie, got to do BST with you last night. Appreciate you taking the time today.
No, of course. Thanks for having me on. This is a good matchup, so I'm happy to talk about it.
So before we get into like the nuts and bolts of it for like more of the hardcore Rebs fans, do me a favor, Charlie. Like, sell this match tonight to, you know, your casual sports fan, or maybe the Red Sox fan who's fed up and thinks that they suck and they're gutless and they've waved the white flag and they're just people that are out there starved for a winner here in the dog days of summer and they want to see a good match tonight and the Revs have been red hot. You know, sell those type of people on this tonight.
Well, it's an easy comparison. You have Bruce Arena, who is now the Revolution head coach and sporting director, which is the equivalent of general manager, who is literally the equivalent of Bill Belichick in the NFL. He's the most winningest coach in MLS history and American soccer history. He's the best coach out there. And they're taking on LAFC, who has the second best coach in American soccer history, who is the front runner to win the league, the regular season outright. They have the best player in the league right now, Carlos Vela, who's a Mexican international. He has 22 goals in 21 matches right now. He's on a record-breaking pace. This Revolution team is 11 games unbeaten, largely untested against some of the top teams in the league, although the first game to kick off this 11-game run was against the LA Galaxy in LA. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, one of the biggest personalities in the world, they were able to beat them 2-1. So it's an impressive win, and this match tonight is really the measuring stick. If the Revs win tonight, this is a team now that can realize we have the potential to win MLS Cup this season.
Charlie, what's the biggest change that you've seen? And I know there have been a lot of them, but with Bruce Arena taking over for Brad Friedel, what has changed here? Because a lot of the personnel is the same. I know they brought in Gustavo Bow, but it just seems like a completely different team.
It is in the sense that when Bruce Arena comes in, he expects everyone to be on the same page. He had everyone understand their roles. If you as a player know what you want from the coach and what is the right way to play for the team to excel, well, that's half the battle. So Bruce Arena is one of those coaches that is a specialist in psychology. He literally just makes the players feel appreciated, makes them feel like they have freedom, and then gives them an idea of how he wants them to play. Now, he's maximized everyone's potential in each position. That's extremely impressive, because when he came in, it's not like he got a new team. It's the same team that was at the bottom of the East. 12 games ago, you thought this team was done. Literally, it was. They had no hope. No one had joy playing for the team. The fans were as frustrated as they could be. And all of a sudden, he comes in and he completely turned the whole thing around. Now the fans are believing not only is this a playoff team, but this team has a chance to go on and run the playoffs. It's remarkable what he's done in such a short amount of time.
Talking to Charlie Davies, previewing tonight's big match for the New England Revolution at home as they host LAFC. You talk about the 22 goals for LAFC forward Carlos Vela. How do they stop him or try to neutralize him tonight?
It's one of those players that I don't think there's a way to completely stop him, but you can slow him down. And the best way to do that is force him to his right at all times. This is a left. He's completely dominant of his left foot, and you force him to the right. You always have cover. He's not the fastest of guys, but on the dribble, he's quick. He has a great burst of acceleration. So it's not a matter of stopping him, but you got to be physical. You got to rough him up and force him to the right. I think if you do that, you stand a good chance of getting the better of Carlos Vela.
Charlie, what's the balance for the Revs, you know, in this game tonight between trying to play sort of the attacking style that they've played, but also not making sure it's too wide open a game, which would play right into LAFC's hands?
LAFC is famous this season for being aggressive in their counter press. And what that means is they have possession in your half, and as soon as they lose the ball, They swarm you to try and win it back as quick as possible and turn that transition right into an attack, which would ultimately result in a shot on goal. That's what they're great at. So this New England offense today, it's about staying compact. And when you do lose the ball, you get numbers back. You have to force them to break you down. Don't let them hit you on the counterattack. Diego Rossi, who's on one wing, and Carlos Vela, who on the other. Those two guys are so dangerous. Those are the playmakers. They make their living on getting in behind with their pace and then causing havoc with shots and following up rebounds.
Charlie, I'm probably just, you know, this. I'm a novice, so help me here. I like looking at what Vela's done this year, what this club in LA has done. It almost feels like they're almost like a European club. This would be a massive, massive upset, I feel like, if the Revs were to pull this off tonight.
It really would be a massive upset. This team is playing phenomenal. They're head and shoulders better than everyone else. However, this New England team is playing with the highest confidence that I've ever seen them, that I can ever recall since 2014, because we did make the MLS Cup final in 2014. But since then, this team looks like they're all in sync. They're bought into what the coach is preaching. And if there was ever an opportunity to take down LAFC, it's right now. You have four players on LAFC who are all all-stars coming in from Orlando. They're flying across the country, which they just flew in late last night. So normally teams from the West Coast fly in 2 days early. They're like, nah, we're good. We'll fly in one day. We won't even train in New England. So they're coming in a little bit cocky, so to speak. So if there's ever a time to take LAFC down, it's definitely tonight.
And just, Charlie, in the 30 seconds we have left here, I just want to ask you, who, in your mind, who's the player who has benefited the most from Bruce Arena taking over on the Revs?
Teal Bunbury, without a doubt. It's tough to say, but Teal Bunbury looks like a revitalized player, almost a new signing. He's been scoring goals. He's been the difference maker because he has that electrifying pace that opens up defense and spreads them out. But Carlos Hill is probably the most underrated player in the whole entire league. He has wow. 9 assists, 8 goals. This is a player that will really make it a case for himself as a player for the best 11 in all of MLS if they are to win tonight.
Charlie, expecting like a playoff atmosphere tonight at Gillette?
At least 25K. It's going to be loud, sold out in the fort. I cannot wait. If there's ever a game to go to, make sure you find yourself at Gillette Stadium tonight.
All right, Charlie Davies joining us here in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Thanks for taking the time. Go Revs, and appreciate you joining us.
Go Revs. Thanks for having me on.
Right, thanks, Charlie.
It's Charlie Davies, soccer analyst and host on NBC Sports Boston, SiriusXM, and MLS. I've now met him a couple of times, you know, doing spots on BST. Great guy. Super nice. And in fact, just I meant to ask him, damn it. We did a segment last night talking about Brady, and is he maybe closer to the end? Obviously, him being 42 today, yes, that's the obvious. I get it, Jim. But with that news this week of him and Giselle looking at homes in Greenwich and in Southern Connecticut, you know, that feels like they're maybe finding a place to settle longer term and looking at schools for the kids. And the other thing, he signed with the William Morris Agency.
Yeah.
Charlie didn't really know we were going to do this segment, and he's also signed with William Morris. He's like, oh, yeah, no, that's for, like, retired athletes. And we were like, what? Like,
oh, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah,
man.
So, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so something to keep in mind with Brady, too. So, like, you know, inadvertently, he had that little bit of scoop. It's like, ooh, wow, how about that? But, yeah, Revs tonight against this LAFC club, two of the hottest teams in MLS, expecting a big crowd, playoff atmosphere tonight. It'd be a hell of an upset if they pull it off. You want to get tickets, revolutionsoccer.net/tickets. Should be a hell of a night. You got good weather tonight for this match at Gillette Stadium. So again, revolutionsoccer.net/tickets. No commercials here. Tim McCone to get you caught up with the Sports Hub headlines. We'll be back, reset some of the topics that we started off the show with today, including the Red Sox. See, again, if you're sick of the Red Sox, you want a winner, go see the Revs tonight, because the Sox, they're in the toilet. After last night's 4-2 loss to the Yankees, they've now lost five straight. We'll touch on that coming up next year on Gaspar Murray, 98.5 of Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.